The curtains were closed and the air conditioner was off to save electricity. I took the Do Not Disturb sign from the inside handle and put it on the outside as I fiddled around trying to find the lights. Sarah passed me as I closed the door and pulled the latch across. I went over to the air conditioner and, leaving the curtains closed, switched it to full blast heat. Sarah was sitting on the bed, pulling her trainers off. I walked back to the other side and checked the window, a sealed, double-glazed unit which overlooked the landing. The only way out was by the door. I visualized my escape route. There were two staircases. I could either get down to the ground or onto the roof. Once on the ground, I would head back to the car park and hijack a vehicle. If push came to shove, I'd kill her here beforehand. I picked up the remote from the bedside cabinet. It was attached to a curly bit of wire so I couldn't nick it, and started flicking through the channels, trying to find some news. The faded silver plastic TV must have been about 10 years old, so were most of the programs. Sarah went towards the air conditioner, pulling off her jacket and muttering, "I need a shower." She started to take off the rest of her clothes, placing them item by item on the heater, then weighting them with ashtrays and a telephone directory to keep them in place. The air was blowing them about as if they were on a clothesline in a gale. I watched her undress as I lay on the bed. I couldn't stop thinking about what she'd said the guys in the house were planning, and about how lucky we'd been to get away. I just hoped she hadn't killed any police. Even if she was telling the truth about the assassination plot, we'd be in deep shit over that. I'd made a conscious decision to let her keep the weapon. If any police had been killed, she had the weapon that linked her to that, and to the Lance killing. London would have to do a mega deal with the Americans. I watched her naked body walk across in front of me, heading for the bathroom. She'd always been at ease with nudity, almost nonchalant, in the way models are. Her body was beautiful and still well-trained. I watched her thigh muscles flex as she moved. Her skin was usually so healthy it glowed. But with those cuts and bruises, she wouldn't be showing her legs off in short skirts for a while. As the shower started splashing, I lay back against the headboard, flicking through the channels with the sound on mute. I couldn't see anything of use yet, like the news. But if I'd wanted to buy a diamond necklace and earrings or an ab cruncher, it was my lucky day. My chin was resting on my chest, my back propped up by the pillow. I could smell myself, wet, mushy, and, like her, in need of a shower. Looking in the mirror to the left of the TV, I saw a scarecrow who needed a shave. I finally hit a news channel that was showing pictures of forests, then the lake. I didn't bother turning it up. This must be it. We were famous. There was film of different emergency vehicles to-ing and fro-ing, police and ambulance crews running around with waterproofs over their uniforms. Then a policeman gave an interview with the same sort of thing going on in the background. I really didn't want to know what he was saying. If there were dead police, a picture of them would soon be on screen. It wouldn't change what I had to do, even though it might make it harder. The news was replaced by a commercial. I was in a semi-daze trying not to nod off. My eyes were stinging as much as my forearm now, at least that had started to scab up a bit. I'd sort it out later. If I'd got tetanus, I'd be finding out very soon. I smiled at myself in the mirror as I thought, I could always sue the police department. This was America after all. I watched a child's toy commercial where two small girls were playing with dolls. Shit. I leaned over to the bedside cabinet that held the phone and a Days In notepad and pen combo, and wrote a big K on my left wrist. Next to the pen was a small book of matches. I put it in my jeans pockets along with the mags. My body was aching all over. I forced myself up, and pulled the phone book off Sarah's jeans. They fell to the floor and I couldn't be bothered to pick them up. I trawled through the yellow pages, looking for car hire, called a free phone number and was told that, for a charge of $43 a day plus tax and insurance, they'd be with me inside an hour and a half. Sarah came out of the shower just as I was putting down the receiver. She had a large towel wrapped around her and a smaller, still folded one in her hands. As she walked across to check her clothes, I could smell the soap and shampoo. "Who was that?" she demanded as she threw the towel by the TV and bent down to pick up the jeans and put them back on the heater. "I've hired a car."
"Excellent. How long before we move?"
I didn't know why she was so pleased. We weren't going anywhere she wanted.
"We?" I said.
"What the fuck's with this we business?" I always seem to regress to South London gobby twang when pissed off.
"All the bollocks you're on about is your problem, not mine. The only we about this, Sarah, is that we've got the North Carolina police, FBI, and whoever else wants overtime looking for us. And if you have killed a policeman and they catch up with us, we're in a very big world of shit. Take my word for it, we won't survive any containment. They'll hose us down on sight. We are going to do nothing. What I am going to do is first get us out of this shit. Then I'm going to get us both back to the UK. End of story. I don't care what is happening elsewhere, or what you want to do about it. I have enough shit here to deal with. Fuck Netanyahu."
She sat on the end of the bed and looked at me. I knew she was going to give me a sales pitch, but tough. I wasn't going to let her get to me.
"Nick, I'm going to tell you anyway. It's important. I need your help."
I cut in. "Sarah, I'm not interested in your stories. Not now, okay?" She wasn't going to give up.
"Look, I am the UK liaison in a contact group set up by the CIA. It's called the Counter-Terrorism Centre, and we're based at Langley. Our general remit is to disrupt terrorist—"
"Sarah, I told you, shut the fuck—" her voice got a bit louder—
"to disrupt terrorist operations. My particular cell is coordinating a US effort with European and African nations to roll up Osama bin Laden's networks."
"Bin Laden? What the fuck?" She looked at me, waiting for me to continue. I didn't, but she knew I was now starting to take an interest. She drew a breath and continued.
"Yes, bin Laden. We had a common cause while he was fighting in Afghanistan, that's true. But the problems began after the 89 Russian withdrawal and his return to Saudi. As far as he was concerned, Nick, Afghanistan wasn't destroyed by the Russians, but by Afghans, who had turned their backs on their religion and their country for money and power. Once he returned home, he saw the same corruption in all the Arab nations that had adopted Western values, above all in Saudi, the land of the two most holy places, Mecca and Medina."
I looked at her blankly, wondering if she would be saying all this if she knew her life depended on it.
"The whole situation was made worse by the Gulf War. To him, the presence of hundreds of thousands of American and other foreign troops on Saudi soil was a desecration of Islam, the return of barbarian crusaders to defile Islam's holy places. He vowed to wage war against their presence in Saudi, and against the Saudi leaders who had brought them into the country. As far as he was concerned, it had become an American colony. He wanted to strike back at the West, in fact, at anyone who was non-Muslim and in Saudi. The thought that former Mujahideen would one day come to the United States and conduct operations didn't enter anyone's head at the time."
She allowed herself a small smile.
"The CIA has a word for it. Blowback. A poisonous fallout carried on political winds, drifting back home from a distant battlefield." The corners of her mouth went serious again as she added, Bin Laden has become, over the last several years, the international terrorist posing the most serious threat to Western interests. He has an incredibly effective infrastructure, and, of course, he has lots of money to fund it all himself. The ASU at the lake was funded by him. That's why I was there.
I shrugged. Listen, if there's shit on, call Washington, London, whatever. Let them sort it out. There's the phone. Call them.
She looked across at the bedside cabinet, but made no movement towards it. Her eyes stayed fixed on mine. I wasn't too sure if she was actually listening or just waiting for me to say more. I got up and went over to the vanity unit outside the bathroom. It had a sink, mirror, shaving plug, soap and hand towels. It was time to clean up my arm. If she was telling the truth, all she had to do was pick up the phone. I took off my jacket, pulled up the shirt sleeve and surveyed the damage. Two rows of nice, clean puncture wounds that any German shepherd would be proud of. If I collected any more scarring, I'd start to look like the Cabbage Patch doll Kelly said I was. I turned on the taps and Sarah remained silent for a few seconds as I rinsed the dried blood and mud off my arm. The puncture wounds were deep, but less jagged than I'd expected.
Nick, don't you imagine that I've already thought of that?
I glanced in the mirror and saw her sitting on the bed.
Making contact with anyone is not an option, because it's not a solution.
I washed the wound slowly with soap and waited for that first horrible stinging to die down, trying to work out if what she'd said was any more than her usual cocktail party performance. The room heater was working overtime and making my eyes sting.
Nick, how do you think the ASU were going to get close to their target here in the US? Just walk up and give him a little tap on the shoulder.
I shrugged. It didn't matter if I knew or not, she was going to tell me. It came at me in a flood.
Nick, Bin Laden has a highly placed source. We think it's possibly as high as the National Security Council. Think about what that means. The group that blew up the World Trade Center. And Khobar Towers in Saudi, remember? 19 American servicemen dead. They also did the 95 bomb in Saudi, another 5 Americans killed. Those are the people who have someone within the administration. That's why I can't just pick up the phone and get inside help. The source would find out, then close down for a few years and never be found. He is the key to stopping Bin Laden.
I could see the passion in her eyes as she continued.
Nick, the source has access to Interlink. Not only does that mean he would know before virtually anyone else of any contact I made. But just think about what information is being passed on to Bin Laden and anyone else he then decides to sell or give it to. Don't you think I would love to call this in?
Well, if all this was true, that was the phone call question taken care of. Interlink is a top-secret network, through which all the US and some allied intelligence agencies share information, very much like their own private internet. Within it, all agencies also have their own intranets, separated by firewalls from the main system. There are about 100 sites that need top-secret security clearance to get access to. Whoever the source was, if he or she had access to it, then they must be big time. I washed, thought, and said nothing. If she was telling the truth, and Netanyahu was killed and the source did exist, it would be a drama. But it wouldn't make much of a dent in my life. Come to think of it, would it affect anyone else's very much? I could still see her reflection in the mirror. Hey, kill one Israeli prime minister, I said. Another pops up. So what?
It seemed that something I'd said had amused her, because her nose twitched and a big smile lit up her face.
"They're not going to kill just Netanyahu, Nick. The main target is Arafat. Bin Laden hates him even more than Netanyahu, for reining in Hamas and other Islamic fundamentalists and supporting the peace process."
I looked down at my arm, trying to hide my smile. "He's not too keen on making friends, old bin boy, is he?" My joke wasn't appreciated. She just carried on as if she was Elizabeth giving me a brief.
"For bin Laden, the important thing about this attack is what it will say to the world. When CNN asked him about his plans, he said, 'You'll see them and hear them in the media, God willing.' Since then, the Islamic Jihad group have sent the United States a warning that they would soon deliver a message to Americans, which we hope they read with care because we will write it with God's help in a language they will understand. His message is that nowhere is safe for United States citizens and their friends. It's the logical extension of the bombing of American interests overseas. The one place that should be safe, here in the US, isn't. Think about it, Nick. Two world leaders killed while guests of the most powerful nation in the world. A perfect demonstration that Allah's Avenger can strike wherever and whenever he wants. Just think what a boost that would be for the fundamentalists. As you would say, they'd be shit on. And the source is there, Nick. Every step of the way."
She stood up and started to walk towards me. I concentrated on dealing with my arm. I said, "And what about the guy we were sent in to lift in Syria? Where does that fit in?" I hoped I wasn't sounding too interested. "And you changed the data. London told me everything." She was now standing next to me.
"Ah, London again. I killed him because I had to, Nick. He knew the real data. If he'd come back to the UK, the corrupt stuff I gave them wouldn't have stood up."
"Why change it in the first place?" She sighed.
"To try to confirm if the source really existed, and where in the NSC food chain he was. Those were early days, Nick. Nothing was confirmed. At that point, he was just a myth."
She clearly felt more had to be said.
"Look, I needed to do it so that when the source, if he existed, got a look at the data, he would have to inform bin Laden that everything was okay, nothing had been compromised. That way, not only did it confirm he existed, but meant that perhaps he could be tracked down. Whoever sent you here will not know everything, Nick."
There was a lull. I knew she was waiting for me to ask another question. I patted my arm with a hand towel, turned and leaned back against the sink. I looked at her, 2 feet away. "We should have been told there was a change of plan, once on the ground. You fucked a job up that killed Glenn." She looked at me confused. "Reg 3, remember?" There was no reaction in her face.
"Yes, of course. I'm sorry about that."
I knew she really didn't give a shit about Glenn. Come to think of it, nor did I anymore. It was a long time ago. Even in the regiment, he would have been long forgotten. Apart from by his family and a few close friends on Remembrance Day. His wife would probably have married another member of the regiment and would be getting on with her life. I got back into the present. "So why are you in the shit about all this, if it was part of the job?" She looked at me with her small, child-in-trouble face.
"That's the problem."
She hesitated.
"They didn't know. I thought that if no one was aware, there would be no leaks."
She was starting to look depressed, as you would if you'd severely fucked up.
"In fact, it was a cock-up from start to finish. The FBI confirmed shortly afterwards that the source did exist.
They call him Yusuf, but they didn't know at what level of the NSC he was. I decided not to tell them about anything I was doing. In fact, they don't even know about what I was doing at the lake.
It was all making sense now. It was so typical of Sarah to be going it alone, hoping to collect all the brownie points and smooth her way up another rung of the career ladder. So now you want me to help you get out of your fuck-up? I couldn't help smiling. Actually, it felt good.
I couldn't tell anyone, Nick. If I had, the whole thing might have been compromised. I wouldn't, couldn't risk it.
But she was risking it with me. That also felt very good, which was making things even more difficult for me. She turned back towards the bed, sat down and hit the off button on the TV remote control, knees drawn up and her arms around them, counting the number of piles there were per square inch of carpet.
The problem is, Nick, I still don't know the identity of the source. No one does. No matter how I did it, that has been the main aim of this last 4 years, to find him, and to force the whole network down.
She had finished with the carpet, and turned back to me as I continued to tend my arm.
The two others who were arriving at the lake today are the only ones here in the US who know who he is. I've only met them once. I don't know their names, contact details, nothing. But my plan was to play along with the hit and get them lifted. I wasn't quite sure how. But once we had those two, we'd get the source as well. It won't stop at Netanyahu and Arafat, unless we can neutralize the top man.
She brushed back her hair with her fingers as it was drying. My breathing was very slow and heavy as I tried to think of questions to help me feel right about what I was thinking.
Nick, you are the only...
The phone rang. Sarah jumped up and started to throw her things on, picking up her weapon and checking chamber. With her jeans halfway up her legs, she pulled the curtain slightly to see outside. She shook her head. I picked up the phone. She carried on dressing. It was reception. We exchanged a few words and I replaced the receiver. It's the car. Take everything, get into the shower room and wait. She picked up the rest of her clothes, towels and bag, and took them with her. I put my jacket back on to hide the wound and the fact that my shirt sleeves were missing and changed channel, checking it wasn't on a news program. I turned up the volume to cover Sarah. There was a knock on the door. As I walked across the room, even I couldn't help noticing how dank the room smelled. I looked through the spy hole. It was a young black guy wearing a blue T-shirt. He had all the forms on a clipboard under his left arm, and a runner for the credit card in his hand. I sat down with him on the bed to fill out the forms. Showing my driving license was always a bit of fun, as most people outside the UK don't have a clue what they're looking at. A damp piece of pink paper that says nothing much at all, and doesn't even have a picture. He was turning the page over for the details he needed, trying to appear as if he knew what he was about. I couldn't bear to see him in pain. The number's there. He smiled at me in relief. As he got up, I could see him trying to work out the smell. I laughed. We were using a friend's car for our holiday. It broke down last night in the middle of nowhere. He nodded, not really caring. When he left, Sarah came out of the bathroom, taking her jeans off again to dry. If she was telling the truth, maybe I would take her back to London. The problem was that although I hardly knew where I was with Sarah, I did with Lynn and Elizabeth. It might be G&T's at 7, dinner at 8 for them, but if I didn't carry out my job, they would fuck me over big time. Maybe even organise my own personal T-104. I needed more information from Sarah. The fact that she'd killed the American gave me a pretty clear idea of whose side she was on. But I needed solid evidence. I sat on the bed as she finished undressing and put her clothes back on the heater. When are they going to do the hit? She came and sat next to me. She looked up at me with excitement, then her face changed.
You still don't believe me, do you, you bastard?
She gripped my arm with her hand.
You must help me. I'm the only one who can identify the two who are left. And I know them, Nick. They won't rest until they've finished the job.
She stared at me. I didn't answer. I knew she was going to continue.
What are we here for, Nick? How will you look at yourself in the mirror if you don't help me to stop it?
Mr. Spock would have been proud of her. The emotional stuff didn't work too much for me. But the story did sound logical. But she'd already fucked me over once, and looking at myself in the mirror had never been high on my list of priorities. I got to my feet and went towards the door. I'm going for a cruise round, to see if I can get her some clothes. What size are you?
8, US. Shoes 6. Why don't I just come with you?
They're looking for a couple now. They may even have a video grab from the gas station. Sit here, I'll be back. Out in the corridor. I closed the door behind me but didn't walk away immediately. Ripping 2 matches from the book I'd picked up, I wedged them between the door and the frame. One a foot above the lock, one below. I heard the locks being closed from the inside as I went downstairs. The rain came down in a constant drizzle as I got into the car, a red satin, and turned over the ignition. The heater blew at its highest setting, the radio blared, and the windscreen wipers thrashed from side to side. The urgent bing 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 told me to put my seatbelt on. I did, inhaling the new car smell. Put it into drive and headed for the road. In case she was watching, I drove out of her line of sight before going round the back of the motel, crossing over the main drag and parking up in the lot for Arby's, a hot sandwich shop. Looking through the power, telephone and stop sign lines which hung above the main drag, I now had a trigger on the motel door. I'd even be able to see where she walked to, as I had the stairs and ground floor in view. If she did something that showed she was lying, at least I'd know. And then I'd have control again. Plus, I could see if the police turned up. What Sarah was going to do once that happened, I didn't know, and I wouldn't wait to see. If she followed her usual pattern, she would probably kill a couple of them, and hopefully get killed herself. It was a risk, not keeping her with me, but worth it. Besides, there was something I had to do alone. I kept watching the motel door as I turned on the power of the mobile, hit the pin, and eventually keyed in 3 digits. An operator answered. "Yes, please," I said. "North Carolina, Century 21. Realtors on Skybow Road, Fayetteville." Century 21 was a family-owned estate agency franchise, letting out apartments. I'd gone there once when I was in the regiment, when a couple of us were staying in Fayetteville for 6 weeks. We spent 1 week in Moon Hall, a military hotel on the base, which was fine enough, but with the allowances we'd been given, we decided to treat ourselves to an apartment. The only reason I could remember the name was that the ski in Skibo was pronounced sky, and I always got it wrong. I kept the engine running so the window wouldn't fog, and my eyes on the trigger. As I waited, I hit the wiper arm to clear the windscreen. The number was given to me and I dialed. The call was quickly answered by a female voice in turbo mode.
"Century 21, Mary Kishburn and Jim Holland Property Management Incorporated. How may I help you?"
I switched to my bad American.
"Hi, I'm looking for an apartment to rent. 3 bedrooms, maybe."
The bigger it was, the more chance there was of the kitchen having the facilities I was going to need. I heard the sound of a keyboard being tapped at warp speed, and within a nanosecond she replied,
"I only have one or two bedrooms available. Do you require furnished or unfurnished?"
She gave me the feeling this wasn't her first day on the job.
"Two bed. Furnished would be fine." "Okay, how long do you require the property for? I need a day's notice for weekly rentals and a week's notice for monthly rentals."
She had obviously decided that for someone like me, who didn't seem to have a clue what he wanted, it would be better to explain right away instead of wasting her time.
"2 weeks, but could I get it today?"
There was a pause. I'd fucked up the procedure. But she recovered with style.
"Right now I have a two-bedroom apartment available to rent for $175 a week or $550 a month, plus electric and tax. If you decide to stay longer, the monthly rental rate would start on month two."
Once I'd heard the first 9 or 10 words, I didn't even listen to the rest. "Okay, that sounds great. What's the kitchen like? Does it have a freezer?" I thought she was going to ask if I'd just arrived from Mars.
"Yes, they all have a full kitchen. Freezer, dishwasher, range."
I cut in before I got the whole list. "And I can definitely have it today." There was another pause.
"Sure."
The computer keys were going into meltdown.
"You need to come into the office today before 5:30, so I can book you in. It will be a $200 deposit in cash, plus 1 week's rental, plus tax in advance, cash or card only. Can I have your name?"
The keyboard was given another brief respite as I slowed the process down by talking at a normal speed. "Snell, Nick Snell." By the time I'd finished, it was on the hard disk.
"Okay, I'm Velvet, the rental assistant. I'll see you here before 5:30.
I came off the phone feeling dizzy. I had to hit the wipers again as I kept both eyes on the motel door. I looked at the half-washed-out K on my wrist, then at my watch. It wasn't too early. I dialed call number 2 and got the answer.
"Hello, lower school office."
"Hello, Mr. Stone here. I'm sorry to call outside of social hours, but is it possible to talk to Kelly? I'm working and I..." Before I'd even finished, a very prim and proper voice, straight out of a 1950s black-and-white film, said,
"That's perfectly all right, Mr. Stone. One moment."
I was treated to an electronic version of Greensleeves. I'd thought that had been banned by the music police years ago. I knew it wasn't perfectly all right. The secretary would have to drag her out of class, or whatever goes on in boarding schools at that time of the evening. Him calling again. The wrong line, wrong day, and always with excuses. But I paid the bills, and on time. It must piss her off. I made a mental note to find out who this woman was and what she looked like next time I visited. I imagined a cross between Joyce Grenfell and Miss Jean Brodie. She came back on the line.
"Can you ring back in a quarter of an hour?"
"Of course."
"Not bad news, I hope. She's been so excited today, because they sang a belated happy birthday in assembly. She's feeling a very special young lady indeed."
I turned off to power with 15 minutes to kill, while keeping my eye on the motel and listening to the radio, feeling really pleased that I'd got it together to call. It would surprise her. I was cut out of the daydream by a news headline. "The Dead Lagan battle only minutes away from vacation in families. We'll bring you more from the scene after these messages." Once I'd listened to an important announcement about this week's sportswear specials at Sears, a very serious voice tried to give weight to the popcorn-style report he was presenting. They had found bodies at the house, and they were thought to be Middle Eastern. However, police were not yet releasing further details. His voice dropped an octave for extra gravitas. Unconfirmed reports suggested that the dead men could be terrorists. At least there was no mention of any dead police, which meant no pissed-off cops hunting for the Bonnie and Clyde who'd murdered their best mates. I sat and listened to the rest of the news, very aware of the uncomfortable dampness of my jeans. It was about 12:17. I powered up the phone and called the UK again, flicking my eyes between the keypad and the motel door. I got the ringing tone and turned off the radio. Our conversations when she was at school were normally quite strained, because she was in the office and people were listening in, and, like the grandparents, they still didn't understand how someone as erratic as me could be in charge of a child's welfare. It rang. She answered.
Hello?
Hi. How are you today? I always tried to sound really happy to put her at ease.
Fine. Where are you?
I could hear phones ringing and Miss Grenfell Brodie fussing around in the background. I'm in London, still working. How's school?
Fine.
And Granny and Grandad? Did you have a good time?
It was okay.
Her tone suddenly shifted.
Hey, Nick, it's really cool you called.
It was great to hear her voice as well. See, I promised I'd ring you. And I have, haven't I? You see, a normal person's promise. Are you impressed or what? She started to spark up.
Yes, and you know what? The whole school sang happy birthday to me today in assembly. Well, Louise, Catherine, and me. They had birthdays in the holidays, too. Are you impressed or what?
I imagined Miss Grenfell Brodie giving Kelly a disapproving look. We don't say or what, remember? Anyway, was it embarrassing?
No. My class bought a present for me. A book of amazing facts. It's really cool.
Wow, I said, trying to work up some enthusiasm. So, what have you been doing today?
Mostly the geography project, I guess.
That's good. I used to love that at school. I looked skywards in case a bolt of lightning was heading my way.
We had wet breaks all day today, she chatted on. Is it raining in London?
Pouring. I got soaked. It was raining cats and dogs. Especially dogs. We both laughed. She said,
Have you talked with Josh yet? Are they back home?
No. They won't be home until tomorrow.
Oh, okay. We need to send a card to say thank you for them coming to see us.
I thought I was the one who had to come up with the grown-up parent-type stuff. Okay. Can you be in charge of that? It would be a really nice surprise for them. Tell them a few amazing facts while you're at it.
I will. During letters.
Great. They'll love that. Letters was an hour set aside each Saturday after study time, when the kids who were boarders had to write to their parents. Or, if you were Kelly, guardian and grandparents. A truck parked between me and the motel. She was still prattling on while I moved in my seat to keep the trigger, and at the same time used the opportunity to adjust my damp jeans.
I wished we could have stayed with them, Nick. Can we go back to the ship?
Yeah, no problem. I realized I was still feeling guilty. She could have asked for anything at that moment, and I'd have agreed to it. The traffic was still screaming past between the target and me, throwing up clouds of water.
Can Josh and everyone come?
Of course. As soon as we go on the next long holiday. Make sure you ask Josh in the card, okay? Even as I heard myself saying it, I knew it wasn't going to happen. The chances of Josh being able to get over to the UK with his kids again were slim because of the expense. I said, I've got to go now. You have a really, really happy birthday time tonight.
Okay. Are you going to ring me again soon?
I hope so. I won't be able to this week, but I'll definitely call after the weekend. Promise. NPP. Are you seeing Granny and Grandad at all?
Yes. There's no drama on Saturday, so after study time and letters,
Granny said I can go stay with them. I was pleased about that, because if they weren't able to have her some weekends, she didn't get to leave the school grounds. Okay, listen. Have a great day.
I will. I love you.
It always felt weird when she did that. I liked it, but I could never say it unless she did first. If I did, it made me feel like I was intruding. I love you too. Now there's another amazing fact. Okay, back to class. I'll speak to you soon, all right? She laughed and the phone went dead. I guessed she knew she had to make the first move. She was happy that I'd called. And I was happy that I'd remembered, too. What was more, it was a lot easier to do now that I knew the firm knew about her. I didn't have to get out of the car and use a public call box. I cleared both numbers from the recall menu and closed down. The truck had moved, so I no longer had to sit like a contortionist to keep the trigger. I sat there for a minute, just looking at the motel door and the traffic cruising between us, feeling very pleased with myself. I switched back into work mode, pulled $5 out of my wallet and went and bought a Coke, trying my best to keep dog on the target through the windows. Once out on the forecourt with my pint and a half of Coke and ice in my hand, I went to the bank of four phones which stood beside the Burger King next door. I pulled out the handset to its full extent so that I could still see the motel. The roar of the traffic was almost deafening. I put my money into call directory assistance, pushing my finger in my ear and pulling on the handset for that last inch of line to keep the trigger. I shouted, "Washington, D.C., British Embassy, Massachusetts Avenue, please." I had to say it again because of the traffic, plus she couldn't understand my Australian accent. I dialed the number and finally got through to who I wanted. "Michael, it's Nick. I need some help, and I've decided to take you up on your offer." There was a slight pause as Metal Mickey mulled this one over. "Well, that depends on what exactly the offer was." I could imagine the smile on his face. "It's just some questions that need answering, nothing that will get you into trouble." I could hear myself shouting down the phone to overcome the traffic noise. "Good. I would just hate to be a naughty boy."
I bet he would.
"No, mate, no trouble. Have you a pen?" He gave a slow, "Okay," as he looked for it. "I need anything that you can find on a handling name. Yusuf, anything you can get." He sounded surprised at my plain speech on the phone. "Nick, aren't you the naughty one? You're supposed to be the one concerned with security." He giggled like a schoolboy. "I know, mate, but this is important and I haven't any time to mess about. The other thing I need to know is what exactly Sarah's been working on these last 2 years in the US. Plus, what did she do the 2 years before that? I know you don't know now, but I just know you'll be able to find out."
"Why, Nick, you old flatterer, you."
He started to laugh as he wrote a note to himself.
"Aren't you supposed to be the one in the loop?"
I let out a sigh.
"Yeah, I know, mate, but I've fucked up and got myself in a muddle. I don't really want to call London and get it sorted out. First time doing this sort of job and all that. It would be very embarrassing."
He let out a squeal of delight.
"Oh, tell me about it."
I didn't have a clue what he was on about. I just carried on before he had the chance to tell me.
"Finally, I need to know what Netanyahu and Arafat are getting up to this week. You know, times, places, that sort of thing."
"Okay. You are a busy boy, aren't you?"
"Oh, and one last thing. I need to know the names and backgrounds of the four men killed last night at a place called Little Lick Creek in North Carolina."
There was a pause. I could almost hear the cogs churning as he linked this to Sarah and her country breaks. I was expecting reply along the lines of, "I don't feel comfortable with this, Nick." But instead, got a very nonchalant,
"When do you need this by?" Later this afternoon would be great. Do you think you can?
I had to turn back towards the booth to hear him as three trucks thundered past.
No, but I know a man who might. I can't wait to call him.
Thanks for that, Michael. I really appreciate it. There is no one else I can ask. You know how it is. But I would like this one to be just between you, me, and the gatepost, okay?
You, me, and the gatepost? Sounds interesting. Bye!
I stepped back into the booth and hung up. I would rather have been talking with Josh, but I couldn't. Until he got back from the UK. Metal Mickey would have to do. The rain had given me a new layer of wet on the shoulders of my jacket and hair. My forearm was starting to sting again. Walking to the car, I lifted up my jacket cuff to investigate. Not good. There were scabs forming. But the bites were deep and needed cleaning and dressing by someone who really knew what they were doing. At least, when it scarred, I wouldn't have to explain anything. The teeth marks said all there was to say. I did a drive past of the motel, checking to see if there was anything abnormal, such as 16 police cars and twice as many shotguns, ready to pounce. Nothing. I parked up and walked past the reception. Looking through the glass doors, I could see that Donna was still at reception, still reading whatever was so riveting below the desk. There was a tray of Danishes next to the coffee machine for the guests, and a bowl of big red apples. Everything looked absolutely normal. I put my relaxed face on and headed through the door. Three children were fighting over who was going to carry what bag. I smelled the coffee and remembered I was hungry. Leaving the family to sort out its shit, I walked over to the machine, picked up coffees, four apples, and the same amount of pastries, and then went back over to Donna. "We've decided to check out early now we have a replacement car," I said, breaking the corner off one of the Danishes and taking a bite.
"Sure, no problem, but I'm afraid I'll have to charge you full price."
She printed out the bill, and I checked it to see if there were any phone calls logged. There weren't. I signed the card counterfoil. I went to the room. The two telltales were still in place. Knocking on the door, I made sure she could see me through the spy hole as I pulled them out. The heat was stifling, and the moisture from the drying clothes and bodies had made it as humid as a greenhouse. She'd gone back to watching TV, sitting on the edge of the bed, still with a towel around her. She took her plate and coffee without looking at me, her eyes glued to the screen. "It's the third bulletin I've seen." As I joined her on the bed, I could see that it was a rerun of what I'd heard on the radio. A reporter was talking with a background of police cars and vans, and then the woods. He was wearing a brand new blue Gore-Tex jacket, probably bought on expenses at Sears on the way to the lake. The hood was down so that you could see his very perfect plastic hair and face, and he was talking in that earnest, "here we are at the scene" tone of voice. The shootings had happened hours ago, but he had to make it sound like the bad guys could reappear any minute. I said, "Have they mentioned any details?" She was sounding quite excited.
"Yes. They've all said it was two men at the gas station, but there are unconfirmed reports that one of them could be a woman. The FBI are at both scenes, but there's been no official statement yet."
She took a bite of Danish and spoke through a mouthful of pastry.
"That woman in the blue Mazda must have been really scared if she couldn't see I was female."
I had to agree. But then again, maybe they were going on the dogs finding Sarah's knickers. After another mouthful, she added,
"There's been no mention of Lance."
I wasn't bothered by that. I knew they wouldn't be giving the media everything they knew. Unless they hadn't found him yet. The main thing was that no police had been killed. I stood up and walked over to the window. Her clothes were mostly dry now. "It's time to move. Get your kit on, let's go.
She pulled her jeans on, and I knew what they would feel like. Stiff and horrible. She got them on, bent her knees and did little squats to make them a bit more pliable. Dusted off the mud and got her top back on. As she put on her size 11 trainers, she looked up at me.
Where are our new clothes?
I forgot. Let's go.
We got into the car and I drove.
She didn't seem to notice to start with, because she was busy eating her apples and drinking coffee. But when we got onto the highway, it was obvious we were driving away from the airport, not towards it. She frowned.
Where are we going?
Fayetteville. She picked up the A4 map sheet of the state that the hire company had left for us.
But that's even further away from Washington. Why Fayetteville?
Because that's what I want to do. I want to be out of here and in a safe area that I know. Then I'll sort my shit out. I kept my eyes open for signs for the 401 South. Her face fell.
You are going to help me, aren't you, Nick?
I didn't answer.
Chapter 23. Keeping to the speed limit so as not to attract any police attention, I drove along the same road as before towards the city. Crossing the Cape Fear Bridge, I noticed a car park on the other side, on the riverbank below the bridge, to allow fishermen and boats to get to the water. As we reached land and passed the slip road down to it, I made a mental note. Soon afterwards, we hit Fayetteville city limits, which seemed to consist entirely of fast food joints.
Why Fayetteville, Nick? Why are we here?
It was the sort of America she'd never seen, nor wanted to, by the look on her face. This is the only place I know in North Carolina. I plan to stand off here until London decides how they're going to get you, and me, back to the UK. They'll have to sort this gang fuck out with the State Department before we go anywhere or do anything. Until then, we need to keep out of the way of the police. In fact, everyone. I glanced across and thought I saw her stiffen. I knew she was rattled about all this, but she was fucked if she was going to show it. I drove down Skybow, and Century 21 was just as I remembered it. A log cabin-style converted home set amongst pine trees, with a small car park in front and a large neon sign jutting out from the side of the road. But I wasn't ready to go in yet. I needed to sort my act out and look at least halfway presentable. I drove some more and found a shopping area set around an open square. Beyond that, way over to my left, I saw the Pentagon, and realized that this must be part of the shopping mall I'd been to before. A large banner hung from a York stone facade the size of a row of houses. It announced that Sears Department Store was ready and waiting to take my money any time with its fantastic sportswear sale. I pulled in and buried the car amongst a whole lot of other vehicles. She was staring at me.
What now?
Clothes. I'll go on my own. What size are you?
I've already told you. I'm an 8, and my shoe is 6, both US.
Then she gave me a look that said, Can't you remember? You used to know that stuff. Looking at her as she smiled, I closed the door and walked towards Goody's family clothing store. Half an hour later, I came back with two bulging nylon sports bags. We went into the Pentagon and changed in the public toilets. I washed my face and made an attempt to dress my arm injuries with some of Goody's finest dishcloths. I should have found a pharmacy, but I just couldn't be asked. There seemed to be more important things to do. Besides, I was the original one-stop shopper. Once washed and changed, I waited outside the washrooms with my bag of old clothes. Nearby was a cell phone shop. I went in and bought two $20 call cards and stopped off at the ATM. Sarah and I looked quite the devoted couple in our matching suburbanite jeans and sweatshirts, with neat nylon bomber jackets for the rain. It certainly made me feel a lot better to be out of my minging old kit, but my eyes were stinging with fatigue, and I had trouble focusing on anything for too long. We got back to the car and threw the old stuff in the boot. I was now into a new phase of the job. "You drive," I said, throwing the keys at her. "I'll tell you where." We drove onto the Century 21 lot and parked up amongst the fir trees. The engine was still running, and I looked across the carriageway towards a gas station, not really concentrating, but getting myself ready for the next few minutes. These things have to look natural, and that can only happen if you act natural. That takes just a bit of preparation. She was confused. "What are we doing now?" "Like I said, we are doing nothing. I am getting us somewhere to stay. The fewer people that see us together, the better. Wait here." I left the keys with her again. It was no drama. She was going nowhere. She wanted me to help her. Besides, she knew that if she drove off, I'd have to call it in. And she would then be OTR, on the run. Not only from me, but also from the police, as the firm would have no option but to stitch her up. I left her counting trucks and went inside the office. I recognized Velvet from her voice as she took another phone inquiry at the speed of sound. Her hair was long, past her shoulders, and she had a dyed blonde perm which was long overdue for a refit. It had so much spray on it that the hairs looked like strands of nylon. The skin on her arms and hands showed that she was in her 20s, but her fingers were yellow and she already had crow's feet from screwing up her face to stop the cigarette smoke getting in her eyes. She looked pretty enough on the outside, but I wouldn't have wanted to look down a fiber-optic scope into her lungs. My eyes were stinging more than ever. She finished her call and looked up.
"Hi, how may I help you?"
"Hi, my name's Nick Snell. I booked an apartment with you this morning." Before I'd finished, she was already going into her files, and moments later she flourished a key.
"I need you to fill out this form. I forgot to ask if you have any pets. If so, they mustn't weigh more than 20 pounds each, and you are only allowed 2. How are you paying?"
"No, I don't. And cash." At last, a reaction from her that wasn't fully automated. Maybe she liked the way I pronounced the word cash. 2 minutes later, I was heading back to the car. I opened the map and looked for North Riley Road, which Velvet had told me was only a few minutes' drive away. Stewart's Creek turned out to be a private community with just one road in and out. It opened up into an area of about 40 acres, on which sat 20 or so blocks of green, wooden-facaded apartment blocks, 3 stories high. We observed the 15 miles per hour limit as we entered our new neighbourhood. "It's apartment 1712, I said, looking from side to side. "I guess that's building 17. Sarah nodded, and we splashed our way through the puddles, looking at the numbers on the large grey mailboxes arranged outside each block. We passed the community pool and tennis courts, beside which stood a row of cool booths and Coke and newspaper machines. "Got it." Sarah turned into number 17's parking lot. We climbed the wooden stairs and entered the apartment. The first impression was brown. There was a brown sofa and chair around a TV and a log fire in the fake stone fireplace, with a chainmail curtain to protect the brown carpet. The living area was open plan with the kitchen area facing us as we went in. At the far end of the room was a set of sliding patio doors with insect mesh on the outer side, which led to a small balcony. The place smelled clean and looked comfortable. In the bedrooms, blankets, sheets and towels were all laid out, ready for use. In the kitchen there was a welcome pack of coffee, powdered creamer and sugar. Sarah went into the bedrooms, closing the blinds. I slipped into the kitchen area and switched on the freezer, turning the dial to rapid. The sound of the motor powering up was too noisy, so I put the fridge on as well. She came back into the living room as I was putting the kettle on. "Now what?" she asked, closing the patio door blinds to cut out prying eyes. "Nothing. You stay here. I'll go and get food. I'm starving.
The kettle's on, why not make a brew? I drove to the nearest store, which was part of a gas station, and bought the normal supplies. A couple of subs, crisps, canned drinks,